Rafael Lozano Emmer è un artista interessato all'interazione con il pubblico. Utilizza tecnologie elettroniche e digitali per creare installazioni interattive, molto spesso pensate per spazi pubblici. È stato scelto per rappresentare il Messico alla 52esima Biennale di Venezia, paese presente per la prima volta nella rassegna con un suo spazio autonomo. Lozano Emmer parla a Radio Papesse dei lavori presentati per questa occasione e rivela, tra l'altro, anche il suo amore per la radio, protagonista indiscussa di un'installazione interattiva del padiglione messicano. L'intervista è in inglese. Ringraziamo Marina Andragi Camara e Leandro Lisboa per aver raccolto la voce di Lozano Emmer. Buon ascolto.
A rented palazzo, which is in the vicinity of the Rialto Bridge. We've got 6 interactive installations at the pavilion, and it's the first time that my country participates in the Biennale. I try to make artworks which are more like performances, where an environment typically works, see and hear and sense the public, and then react to him or her. The works are typically sensor-based, so there's a surveillance mechanism that detects the presence of people, or sometimes they have sensors, such as one of the installations has a heart rate biometric sensor that measures electrical activity in the heart, and then we transform that into different kinds of outputs in the gallery space. So, for instance, flashing light bulbs or chairs that electromechanically move up and down. So the work comes from different traditions, comes from a tradition of kinetic sculptions, let's say, and then sort of nightmares or biases or obsessions of mine that at the moment are happening. I studied chemistry in university and the sciences. I am very interested in the fact that most understanding of science in the humanities is in fact quite antiquated. People think of science as a very 19th century sort of Comte positivism. And the reality is that science today is a field with intense uncertainty and intense creativity. And I was always attracted by the rigor of science and the experimentation. So oftentimes I say, you know, one could say that art itself, at least the kind of art that I make, is about reactions. It's about putting things. At the same time, I don't think that the science part of my work is so prominent, is so important. I don't believe that it should be necessary for people to know science in order to be able to relate to an artwork of mine. And that's because I think that, you know, the work is informed also by other things, like I'm interested in performing arts, I'm interested in more expressive, wrong and slow, which is what the art part is. Not the search for a very concrete, objective truth, but rather the capability to imbue objects and installations with as many interpretations as possible and let people figure out, you know, how it works for them. I used to read a lot of theory, and I very much love, you know, sort of critical thought. The problem is I am not very good at theory, and now when I look back at my terms and my new words to describe my work, such as, you know, antimonuments of alien memory and so on, you know, I kind of have a little bit of irony to all of these terms. But it is true that, you know, each word you can take and define in permanent, universal, but rather to create something that's ephemeral, something that is not based on the big memory of history, but on the little memory of people who, just by interacting with the work, establish new relationships. So the anti-monument doesn't try to consolidate power into a single object, for example, like you may with a sculpture that wants to be in the memory of a war or something like this. It's rather about those temporary. See, is this idea that I really dislike the word new. For example, we say new media or new technology. Not true. We know that in fact all of these technologies and all of these media are, you know, reprocessed concepts that have been around for a very long time. So I try to replace the word new by the word alien. So it's alien media, or it's an alien idea. And the reason I do that is because alien just means it does not belong. It was there already, but you bring it to a new context and you reinterpret it. So this alien word I like because it doesn't have the claim to originality that new does, and it also sounds, you know, sci-fi. I've been to many biennales and museums and galleries and fairs, but the truth is that in fact I've only been in the visual art system, let's say, for about 3 or 4 years. Before that, I did not have a gallery, and most of my work was not so close to visual arts. It was closer to performing arts. So for example, we would make a very large shadow play in a city, and we would charge, you know, a fee, much like if you're a theater, you charge a fee to make a representation of a piece. We would show it for 2 weeks, get paid, and then go away. So there was no object, there was no collection, there was no preservation. It was more something that was more to do with negotiation and agency and performance. Now that I'm in the world of collections and preservation and so on, you know, I get concerned about several problems. One of the main problems is when you're working with new media or alien media, you have to be very conscious of the fact that, you know, the machinery that you're using to make a particular piece will fail, for example. It will need maintenance, it will need improvements, and it will age and die. And so issues of preservation, for example, come up. You know, well, how do you best preserve this and so on? And the reality is that I used to be quite bored about the amount of time that the visual art world spent preserving things, with this sort of desire for this necrophilia and possession and just this cult of fetishes and objects. Now I'm more relaxed into it because I think that it is an interesting challenge. My position now with respect to preservation and all of these other obsessions of the visual art world is that so long as it doesn't interfere with my capability to continue doing public art, ephemeral interventions, performance art, then it's not a problem because these two things can coexist. So here at the Venice Biennale, I was very, I guess, surprised by the amount of commercial sort of arrangements around pavilions, how artists present themselves, you know, not just by their country, but also by their gallery. And I don't have a big moralistic tale to say, because I myself, I'm represented by galleries, but it is interesting to think about the way in which a lot of this visual production is already quickly finding collectors and buyers, and what is the relationship between the market and all of that. I don't have, like I said, I don't have solutions to it, but I think it is problematic, and we have to think about, well, the artwork and the art world, it needs to survive the moment that an economic depression hits, and I'm curious to see what will happen when that takes place. I work with technology not so much because it's something new, but because it's something inevitable. In other words, I don't do it because I think, oh, look at this new resolution, or what I call technological correctness, you know, to be able to have these big plasma screens with the biggest resolution. I have no interest in that. I work with technology because I see it almost as a language. It's something that you can't be without. So even if you don't work with computers, for example, today, if you have a credit card, there is a database of what you buy, where you buy it, where you live. I mean, there's a profile of your self in a virtual world with which economics decisions, political decisions are made. Because of the globalized culture, I feel like there is, even if you're a painter, you're working in a technological culture of interconnectivity. Even if you're in the third world, a starving person, you are, in a way, the result of all of these transactions taking place and leaving you outside. So I think working with technology is just something that cannot be avoided. if you take this position, then you feel like you don't have to be at the most recent productions of gadgets and so on. You feel like your approach to technology can be more critical or funnier or ridiculous or whatever it may be. In my opinion, it becomes less about the novelty, and this is very good. I think that a lot of artists that were established visual artists are becoming more interested by, you know, say, internet or by, you know, sort of the capabilities for computers to orchestrate different media. And then at the same time, so these visual artists are now taking up all of those tools. And then also the so-called new media artists are beginning to take their work into the museums and into the collections and being accepted as one more of the fine arts. So to me, the interesting thing of new technologies or new media today is, in fact, that it's not new, that it's normal. And the sooner it can be seen as one more of the established fine arts, the better. So that when we see an exhibition, we don't say, oh, you know, this is a media art exhibition and they're all of these things have computers. Well, that's not good enough. You know, it's not good enough reason to show them because they have computers. I would much rather see my work or the work of other new media artists in the context of other productions, be it sculpture or be it installation or performance or whatnot. I think that's the direction in which I would like to go, and certainly some of my colleagues too. I did several things, but I had a radio program, a weekly radio program in Montreal in the university radio called CKUT. The group that I was part of was called Pomo Como, and mostly what we did was, it was a, you know, sort of cultural show that had some performance art, some radio art pieces. We wanted to, you know, sort of come from traditions of musical collage and musique concrète and sort of sample different sounds. We were playing a lot with ideas of non-linearity in radio, trying not to be didactic or pedagogic, but rather for the radio broadcast itself to be experimental in nature, to explore the possibilities of this broadcast medium, like so many people had done before us. And sometimes what we would do is we would collaborate with some of those pioneers. Like, for instance, one time we worked with Dick Higgins, who one of the members of the Fluxus group, who had been doing a lot of Hörspiel, which is this kind of radio narratives, doing performance of all sorts, music. Sometimes we would do things like we would broadcast a particular signal that would then be picked up by radios around the city, and we would have like all of these instructions going over in the radio, which were kind of like, in my opinion, failed attempts to connect radio to a sort of urban performance. But I think there is a tradition of radio art that I'm very fascinated by to this date. And though I don't do radio anymore, or not yet, or not for the time being, it's a medium that I find fresh, it's immediate, it's a lot more democratic, a lot more lateral. You know, it's not like a vertical column, and I like that because it allows different voices to be heard, potentially. I mean, I have a big archive somewhere in my basement of tapes, and I haven't been down there in a long time, but I'm sure one day I'm gonna want to go and listen to that material and make a compilation of some sort. But right now it's just so many hours of tape just sitting there, I'm gonna leave it and wait for some more time to pass by. Oh, because I moved from Canada, where the media is quite democratic, accessible, to Spain, where the media was precisely the opposite. I moved to live in Madrid, and it's a funny story because I went to teach at a university in Madrid, and in this university they had 5 radio stations, but none of the radio stations in Madrid actually had a broadcast antenna. So to me it was just so incredibly stupid that people were being trained without actual broadcast. It was very frustrating to me to see how in Spain the media was so clearly a vehicle for just control, right ahead and get a program and start doing it. And I think that that is something that's very peculiar to Canada. It's something that, you know, people can have access to that. And, you know, I hope that in Italy, you, the fact that we're doing this over radio is an interesting example that maybe in Europe things are changing as well. Definitely in Spain they have not changed. I sometimes use sound, not, I would say only about like 20% of the time. Some of the pieces are specifically sound works. For example, here at the Venice Biennale, I have an installation called Frequency and Volume. And what it is precisely a radio artwork. It's an installation where your shadow is projected onto a wall by a big projector. And then as you walk from left to right, there's a surveillance tracking system that detects you and tunes different radio frequencies in the electromagnetic spectrum. So we have these scanners that can listen to any frequency between 150 kilohertz and 1.5 gigahertz. What it means is that as you move from left to right, you can listen to taxis, you can listen to air traffic control, you can listen to the police, you can listen to AM radio, FM radio, you listen to cell phones. And so it's very interesting because you use your body to tune to these different sounds. And then if you increase the size of your shadow, that increases the volume of the channel that you're tuning. So what happens is sometimes, especially when this piece is presented in a bigger space, in Venice it's a bit small, but you can have several people simultaneously tuning different signals, up to 16 simultaneous signals. And it becomes quite a instrument, like a sound sculpture, because people can choose to tune a digital pager, which sounds beep, 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 and somebody else is tuning Radio Maria, and there's some people praying, and somebody else is tuning some hip-hop. And it's very nice to see the combination of these sounds, and in a way it's like a human mixer, where everybody can be mixing these sounds. So that's an installation specifically about sound and about how so many different realities coexist at the same time in a space. And that piece is in fact inspired by, there's a Mexican futurist movement, it's called Estridentismo in the 1920s, and Estridentistas worked a lot with radio. Their manifesto was called the Manifesto for Antenna Man. And the Manifesto for Antenna Man is this inspiration or this precedent of this idea of the body as a recipient of all of these broadcast waves. So that's an example of a sound piece where specifically, you know, what we're trying to do is materialize that sound into our body space. So sound and interactive art is, I would say, a key element. Most interactive art seeks to create a sensorial or environmental effect, and this environmental effect is in contrast to, say, the desire to make a discrete object. When you're thinking of an artwork as an environment, you have to think about not just the visual sense, but the proprioceptive sense. You have to think about time, you have to think about interaction, you have to think about sound, because the sound, even if you choose not to have it, it's there. As we all know, silence is, as Cage would indicate, you know, the key sort of platform upon which we build everything. So I think it's interesting the ways in which artists are using sound in new media. I mean, oftentimes, including in my work, sometimes it's just feedback. So, for example, you're doing something and there is a small sound that comes back to you as information that something has happened. Other times it is music, of course, and it's an accompaniment, something that happens in conjunction to visual events. There's a big tradition of synesthesia, of mixing sound and computer graphics or video in a very intimate way, which has been done for a very long time, but now there is the tools to make that happen are very available and inexpensive. So we're seeing more and more the mixture of VJ and DJ culture. Of course, it's something that's very natural to all of us. At the same time, you know, there's people who specialize in then blending that into very, very tight visual audio works. People like Toshio Iwai or Granular Synthesis. I mean, they're people who are matching these visuals and these sounds. There's people, artists that I'm interested in who work with interactive sound installations of the type similar to Frequency and Volume, where The sound itself is the content. The sound itself is the vehicle for connection. So, you know, I think that it's impossible to make new media work if it's environmental without thinking about how sound will be involved. I have a new sound piece that I just did, which is a very simple sculpture. It's an installation which has these very nice big microphones, and you come up to them and you speak. And what we've done is we've rewired all of the microphones, so there's inside of the head of the microphone, there's a microphone, there's also a speaker, and there's a computer. So when you speak, the computer records your voice and then immediately echoes back from the microphone, speaks back with whatever somebody previous to you just said. So it's a very sort of strange piece because, you know, not only the microphone speaks back to you, but there is like a memory of what people have said to it. So in this sense, the fact that this is a microphone and that it's this visual icon is secondary. What really matters is that the sound and the recording of it is got this dynamic of repetition and echo. So yeah, there's many approaches to sound, and yeah, like I said, I think it's inevitable. People will keep on using it.
Radio Papesse è un progetto di Ilaria Gadens, Carola Haupt e Cristiano Maggi.